listening to the Creative Pep Talk Podcast. This show exists to help creative people thrive. I'm your host, Andy J. Pizza. You can stay up to date with Creative Pep Talk and my creative work by following me on Instagram at Andy J. Pizza. Let's jump into today's very special episode. This episode is sponsored by AstroPad. AstroPad is an app that turns your iPad into a professional graphics tablet for your Mac. It works with any Mac app, so you can use creative tools like Photoshop and Illustrator right on your iPad. Check out astropad.com to learn more. This episode is also sponsored by Squarespace. Squarespace is an all-in-one solution for anyone looking to create a beautiful website. You don't want to make a gross website, do you? If you do, I don't know what to tell you, but if you don't, go to squarespace.com and use promo code PEPTALK, all one word, to get 10% off. Thanks. Quick announcements. Go get yo calendar, the Creative Pep Talk calendar. We are doing a week-long sale on the calendars to keep up with the times of the Thanksgiving sales days. I don't know. Black Friday, Small Business Saturday, Cyber Monday. We're going to keep it from this week until next week. We got a sale on the calendars. Go check it out at creativepeptalk.com/shop. And then also keep your, my words are getting weird. Here's what I'm trying to say. I, from time to time, I open up a few slots to do these personal pep talks, which is essentially like kind of creative career consulting, the CCC, creative career consulting, and they go really fast, and I don't open them up that much because they're really hard to fit into my schedule, but I love doing them so much. They're like, they are honestly one of the things that makes me most euphoric. And I feel like very in the center of my passion when I'm helping people with their creative careers, and I wish I could do it more. But anyway, go sign up to the newsletter on creativepeptalk.com to keep, if you're interested in getting one of those and being, able to get one of those slots, go sign up to the newsletter, and I'm going to launch send an email out when I launch those in the next week or two. So don't miss that. So go check that out if that's what you're looking for, and let's get to the show. My goodness. Oh my gosh. This episode, I'm so excited to share this episode. I've wanted to share it with you for a few weeks after, it's been a few weeks since I recorded it. It is with my man, Andy Mineo, who is a musician, a rapper. And, I hadn't heard of Andy. I think the way that we connected was through my buddy, Alex Medina, who I met last year at Creative Works, and we've kind of followed each other online. Alex is a producer for Andy and also their friend Lecrae, who you may have heard of, who's another rapper. Alex makes some sweet beats, and he also makes some sweet graphics. And I'm a big fan of both of his talents. And anyway, I think we must have connected somehow through Alex, and I knew that I heard that Andy was a big fan of Creative Pep Talk. I started digging into Andy's work and his creative ethics and his passion, and became a massive fan of what he's doing. And so when he was coming through town, I sent him a message and said, hey, let's connect and maybe we'll record an interview. And we did, and it was a fantastic conversation that I'm sure gonna keep going for several years to come. And I know you're going to love this. This guy's super talented, passionate guy who is just a student of his craft. And I know he's just, he's on a journey to spiral into the cosmic dimensions of creativity and beyond. And you are going to love all this talk and shop and all these great ideas about what it takes to get your best work out. Even through the hard times and the struggles and the self-doubt. He gets really vulnerable. We talk about all kinds of good stuff. This guy is a good dude, an amazing creative, and I know you're going to love this. Here he is, Andy Mineo. Doing my dance, hey. I'm doing my dance, don't mind me. I'm doing my dance, hey. Look, I'm doing my dance, watch. I'm doing my dance, hustle. I'm doing my dance, work. I'm doing my dance, hey, hey, just doing my. So, the first thing I wanted to say was, I don't know if you know this, but I'm from Indiana. So, okay. You're going to be like a legend in my neck of the woods, right?
Well, we just did a show there, and it was incredible.
Really?
Yes.
How long is your song has been, is like now the Pacers anthem.
Yes.
For 2017, 2018.
Season, yeah.
Yeah, so.
I just got the music video back today, the edit. I should show you. But it's me and all the players, and they're going to play it on the Jumbotron, and we're like dancing around. It's fun.
That is amazing. So I am not a sports fan at all, but I have been to like hundreds of Pacers games.
Yes.
And I can't pay attention to it, but I tried. Man, when I was a kid, I was so all of my family is crazy basketball people, and I would go into the game, you know, like, I could go on to a billion analogies, but like, I'm like, I'm gonna like sports, and I'm gonna watch it, and I'd get there, and I'm like watching the game for like 3 seconds, like, pass to that guy, and I'm like, cotton candy guy is hilarious over here. And I'm like, yeah. No, you're not watching the game.
So doodling, drawing stuff.
Yeah, but my dad will be proud. I'll have like one thing.
Yeah.
Like I keep wanting to work with Nike just so I can have my dad be like some kind of connection to what I do. But that's amazing, dude. That seems like super massive.
Man, it was super fun. And you show up and like, you know, just cheerleaders everywhere, and they're just like, here's your jersey, and you're like, oh, thanks, you know. And you know, they're in the video, and they're hanging, and you know, just meeting all the players.
Yeah.
And Lance Stevenson out there, and you know, you're tempted to kind of make a blow in the ear joke, and you're just like, is he gonna hurt me if I do?
Yeah,
don't do
it. Hilarious.
So
are you an NBA fan?
Well, you know, I love basketball. It's probably my favorite thing to do in my free time. Like if someone says, what's your hobby?
I like to play.
Oh, my favorite.
But I don't watch.
We're trying to find courts on every, you know, tour stop that have to shoot around and play. So I love to play. It's just keeping up with sports.
Yeah.
Man, my career and my time is so divided.
It is like
that
a
to
zone.
Watch a game is like such a thing. Unless I'm there with somebody or the players invited me or...
Yeah.
You know, it's like Thanksgiving is like the one time a year I'm like, I'm going to watch a Green Bay game, you know, and I like feel the freedom to do it. It's a holiday, but or the finals, you know, but
yeah, that's awesome. Well, you know, listening to You Can't Stop Me, I was struck by an affinity for what you were talking about in the second verse. You're talking about dealing with insecurities about creativity. You're kind of talking to yourself. Working through the voices in your head, the things that are stopping you from doing your work, doing your best work.
Yeah.
And I wondered if you could just like set that up, like what's going on in that verse a little bit, and then talk us through how you work through that creative self-sabotage.
Yeah. It'd be good to go over the lyrics maybe and just like work through it. So it's... You're my biggest opponent. You know me, I know you, we know it. Whenever I fail, you've always been there to simply remind me I've blown it. You don't see when I'm growing. You don't see where I'm going. You only see in the moment. You know my mistakes. You never let go of it. You know, that whole, like, your failures are always being maximized in front of you. And your successes are kind of like... I think Drake actually said it in a song. He said, they scream out my failures and whisper my accomplishments.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's like, I think that that's what I feel often is, as a perfectionist, as someone who loves to push myself to do better and to do more, who's never really satisfied, you know, that's that fine line, you know, that you battle with is me always feel like I could have done better, I could have done more, and having to settle for like, you know, releasing and being enjoying the process and not, you know, letting my joy of the product that I made be hinged upon the way it's received, but in just the act of creating. And
because if you don't do that, you're not going to get the good stuff.
Man, it's true.
Yeah.
It's so true. And so often I worry about the outcome, mm-hmm. and it really messes with the process.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I seem to highlight my failures, my weaknesses. I know my weaknesses probably better than anybody else. And it's weird. You know, someone said this before, you know, one negative comment, you know, is more impactful than seven positive comments in a comment section.
Yeah,
like,
man.
I'm going through my, you know, thing. I post something. It's amazing, amazing, great. I love it. Oh, my gosh. Fire emoji, blah, blah, blah. You suck. And I'm like, what? Who are you? You know, I'm like, want to respond to them. So it just seems like failures or shortcomings seem to be highlighted a lot more for myself. That's my own mm-hmm. insecurity. And, yeah, as I continue to work through that verse, I even say some of the things like, you'll never write a verse like Kendrick, mm-hmm. never be the rapper rock out from Hendrix, top 10 alive, you will never be mentioned, why aim so high, won't survive the trenches. Like, those are the feelings that I have. Like, I had a friend ask me one time, you know, who's your top 10 rappers, like, to ever live? And I was like, I don't want to give you that list.
Yeah.
And I was dead serious because I was like, I really feel like I'm in the running to be one of the top 10 rappers to ever live. And that's, you know, mm-hmm. that's when my bachelor party was happening. I was 26 at the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was like, I don't even like that thought of just like other, you know, mm-hmm. I feel like I am a part of the culture and I'm striving for greatness. And, you know, but those doubts, like, man, that's such a high and lofty goal. Why even aim for that, mm-hmm. you know? You'll never be as great as these guys and those guys. And comparison is one of the things that, you know, I talk about on there. Comparison has stolen so much of my joy and creativity, man.
And like, you're not alone in that, that's for sure.
I wrestle with that so often, even this morning, man. Just like whenever I see guys sometimes who started after me,
yeah,
you know, but yeah. then blew up then, way yeah. in front, and you're like, what?
Yep.
How did that happen? You know, I was like, man, I'm just not good enough. Maybe my stuff isn't powerful enough. Or, and you start trying to figure it out, like all the comparison. And it's a super whack game, man. Mm-hmm. Like, it just can really discourage you and eat at your heart. And, you know, those are things I deal with as a creative, like, regularly. But I didn't before,
yeah.
which is interesting. I never really dealt with that stuff. I didn't really focus on anybody when I first started. I was just like, I'm doing me. I don't care what no one else is doing. I'm taking all the risks I want. I'm being exactly myself. And over time and with age, you start to, I don't know, I start to lose some confidence in myself, you know, start wrestling with insecurities in a new way, anxiety. And I think something, I'm just diving into the deep end.
Oh, man, this is exactly what I'm hearing.
Man, some of the... stuff that I dive into is, I think there was something really special about the season of my life where music wasn't necessarily my full-time gig.
Yeah.
Like, there was still...
Everything wasn't hinging on that.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I was in college, or I was fresh out of college, and, like, I had all this energy. You know, I'm in New York City. I'm living in a house with like five guys, so there's always energy. Because I was single at the time, and I was like, yo, I'm going to save up my money. I'm going to live with five guys. I'm going to have the studio in there. And you have the energy and all that stuff going on. And you know, like, shows were coming in, and everything was new and fresh and exciting. And it wasn't just like the everyday job yet. It was just kind of like, whoa. It's kind of like falling in love, you know? It's that first, absolutely. Like, oh my gosh, this is incredible. And then you're in it for 5 or 6 years, 10 years, and you still love it, but it's changed. It's a little different. It doesn't always feel like butterflies at every phone call, you know what I'm saying? It's more complex. Mm. It's more nuanced. It's more, And so that's what it was for me. And I think I was just focused on creating and having fun and expressing myself and experimenting, because there wasn't a very big sense of risk involved. It was like, if nobody cares, nothing changes, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, right. Yeah,
but
same old status quo, what's happening. Yeah.
And but if now when people do care...
So it's just exciting.
It's just exciting.
Yeah.
Now when people do care and they expect greatness, you know, So for out the gate, I sold like 30,000 records first week on my debut album. People were like, what, who are you?
Yeah.
Next record we dropped, Neverland, and I do digital only. So we didn't even have physical stores because we were just rushing to get it out. And it did almost the same exact numbers in just digital sales. So if it was physical and digital, crazy. It might have been 50, you know, 60. And so it was just like, bow, bow. And the first two records come out, people love them. And then it was all this pressure all of a sudden, like, now you have to live up to it, you know? And that's when the anxiety and the stress and all that stuff started to settle in. You also start building stuff as a business owner, you know?
Yeah.
You're like, all right, I'm getting an apartment. I'm getting this overhead. I'm paying for all these people. And now the thought of, wait, now that I have something, I could lose it. And if I lose it, then all these people I employ are now, you know. So all those stresses started to pile up for me. And, you know, I think I was like in the middle of that, you know, as I was writing that record or even forecasting some of it, you know, the pressures of
doubt.
You're
seeing it coming.
Yeah, seeing it coming. And I was writing about it and You Can't Stop Me. Then I end the verse with, you know, my biggest enemy is me and even I can't stop me. That like self-assurance that like, I am my biggest creative enemy, and like I'm gonna succeed, you know.
That makes sense, and I the way I always think about it is, I always say that like MJ wouldn't be able to get. See, I never watch sports, but all my references are sports because that was my whole childhood. But I always said that like. I heard there's this thing called the zone.
Yeah.
And I always think like MJ would be unable to get in the zone if he had to ref the game at the same time. So if his head is, you know, editing himself.
Yeah.
While he's creating, like you're not going to get into the flow, into the zone. If every paintbrush stroke that you do, you're like, wait, was that good? Is that going to be as good as the last one? Like you're not in it. You know what I mean? And I feel like I started there because I had a kid right away and I have no plan B just because I can't do anything else.
All I know
how to do is creativity. So I feel like I started in that anxiety and slowly by like making my way started to gain confidence.
Yeah.
But I totally relate to that. So you talk a little bit about it in that verse, but when you're feeling those things, have you found any tips and tricks that help snap you out of it?
I wish I had the answer to that. No.
Yeah.
I did make probably one of my favorite songs to date out of that anxiety.
What?
So I was having that like 2016. I started dealing with anxiety, depression, like. Because I think a couple things happened is, one, I started to wrap my identity as a human inside of my creativity. And when you put your identity in what you do...
Everything's at stake.
Everything is at stake. Because if people don't like my song and my song's a failure, I'm a failure.
Yeah.
And so, you know... But it also, like when it's working, it works really good.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because you feel great. My song's out. People like my song. They like me. I feel good.
Yeah, man.
And then they don't like your song. They don't come to your concert. They don't whatever. You can be crushed as a human. It's weird because in the music industry, it's like your value. Literally, this is what they say. You have a value of this. This is how much you're worth a show. This is your ticket value. Mm. And someone else is worth more. And it's like... But if you think on a human level, an intrinsic level, you know, I believe that we are all made equal in the image of God and that He gives us value just by existing. And you, like, I don't rest in that often. Mm-hmm. I often put my identity in what I do. And so it works really well when you're winning and it destroys you when you're failing.
Because you're all in.
Right, because you're all in.
When it's working, it's working.
And it also pushes you to greatness. Like, I think about the Michael Jordan scenario and I'm like, yo, I've heard that his family life suffered because of his will to be great, you know?
Yeah.
Like I have to be great because I'm on the line. It pushes people to do maniac things like, I'm going to stay up all night and never sleep and go to sleep, blah, blah, blah. And we admire that. Nobody in culture really, like, disproves of that. Like, hey, man, you should have a healthy marriage. Mm. Hey, man, you should have kids that grow up with a present dad, that when you look at your kids, they don't feel shame. They feel happy that dad was there. Like,
and rest enough so that you have willpower to make good decisions. Like, you know,
to take your wife on a date.
Yeah.
You know, to like,
let alone and not have an affair and
XYZ. Yeah. Nobody's saying that.
No.
You know what I mean? So we just applaud the greatness of what these people who push themselves become. Mm-hmm. And so that's a strange place to be, man. But I was in that really dark place, anxiety, feeling like my career was over, feeling like I was done. And it was just a bad bout of self-doubt.
Yeah.
And I said, you know what? I've stopped having fun now. Mm. Now I'm just creating to protect an identity. And I said, I'm going to go to the tour bus, and I'm just going to make a song for me, and I don't care if anybody else likes it. And so I go to the bus, and I take out this little USB microphone, which is all I had, which is actually what I recorded You Can't Stop Me on.
Really?
A little USB mic in a green room like this.
That's crazy.
Ends up being my biggest song. It's about to go gold and everything, right?
That's
and you just
crazy.
Think about, you know, the least likely thing ends up becoming the most popular. Mm-hmm. Crazy. There's a story. Yeah. There's just a story in that.
We should come back to that.
We should.
Yeah.
So I pick up the little USB microphone and I go, I don't know how to play the keys, so I'm just gonna hum this thing in, you know. I put a distortion pedal on it, I made it sound crazy, and it's right, it sounds like this big song. And I just start screaming, I ain't done. As long as there's breath in my lungs. And I started having this like overwhelming like screaming going on. Like I'm screaming myself out, like I'm not finished because I'm alive. And if I'm alive, that means I have an opportunity to change right now and to keep going. And I literally freestyled the whole song. Just like the lyrics came to me. It was like, oh, well, if they don't like it, I might turn up by myself, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't care if anybody likes this. I'm going to do it for me. And it was just like this freedom cry, this like chant. And tonight, if you're at the show, I'm going to premiere that song and you get a chance to hear it. But, you know, I still deal with it. But that was one way that I channeled that energy into my creativity and started to like not care, trying not to care, mm-hmm. trying to just be like, I am what I am, you know, like, if you don't love it, someone else will.
Yeah.
And I'm going to enjoy this. And so I'm fighting every day to get back into the joy.
That's a really good trick. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I think trying to figure out how to do it for the joy of the process, not the reward. And trying to divorce yourself from the reward and get into the process of it. I actually had a really similar thing where one of my most popular episodes is called Anxiety. Recording it was the most anxious I've ever been. It was not connected to the topic. I was just slated to do that episode.
Yeah.
And I was going through the worst anxiety I'd ever had about the exact same thing, which was like, just slowly people started listening. It's still a humble, you know, podcast and everything, but slowly people started listening and people were giving me good reviews and talking about it. And I just had done it because I wanted to do it.
Yeah.
And I just started, I was like shaking, recording that episode, this like meta anxiety, having this anxiety, talking about anxiety. And it's awesome that you created from that place.
Yeah.
And you found some like solace in the process of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. I want to go back to that story in a minute, but real quick, just because it's kind of a nice segue to something else I want to talk to you about. You approach creativity the same way that you seem to approach your life, which is through the lens of faith.
Yeah.
And I wondered if that weird marriage of creativity and faith, whether it's a blessing, in what ways it's a blessing.
Yeah, for sure.
And for people that maybe don't have faith or don't come through their creativity, what ways, what do you have that maybe they're not able to have? And then also, in what ways it's a burden sometimes as a creative, because I think there must be both sides of that. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Man, there's so many pluses and negatives of that. Like, I'll give you some immediate positives.
Yeah.
You know, as a person of faith, like, whenever someone else finds out, it's almost like the little secret. Yeah. It's almost like a secret sorority.
As a faith person.
Yeah. Or anything, like, coming out as gay, coming out as, like, a part of a sorority. Like, you know, it's like, oh, he's part of Alpha Beta Phi. You know what I'm saying? It's like, all right, I'm going to give him the job.
Team? Oh, wow. Yeah. I've got all these pre-assumptions about what that means.
Right. Yeah. But it also serves as a rallying point. So when other people want a champion, you know what I'm saying, in spaces, like, you know, for black-owned businesses, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if you're black and you feel connected to the empowerment of that, you're like, I'm rooting for them to succeed. You know what I'm saying? Or, and it, for me, an Italian-American.
There's a tribe thing.
Exactly. Yeah. So that is really helpful because people rally around and say, man, I have the same faith as you. I want to see you win. Like, I'm about faith and positivity and goodness. Like, we need more of that. And they'll rally that. The other tough part is people who don't share that are often off put if they sniff it out.
Yeah.
Or if someone mentions it, you know, like.
Yeah. Someone can suck the air out of the room.
Yeah. Say, and it's like.
Jesus or something.
Yeah.
It's
nobody.
Not when everybody. Yeah.
And it's so, you know, that's why it's always been frustrating, like, for people that introduce my music to new people and they use those words, like, listen to this, like, Christian artist or Christian rap. And you're like. Yeah, it looks like someone coming up to me and being like, hey, man, you want to listen to, like, this Buddhist rap? And you're just kind of like, I don't know, like, that's not my first inclination.
Yeah.
But if you would have just said to
me. It's a divisive way of introducing something.
Right. Yeah. But if you believe that, then it rallies you.
Yeah.
But if you don't believe that, it immediately puts you off. So I've never tried to, well, not never. I think the latter years of my life, I've just said, you know what? I'm not going to lead off with that. I'm just going to lead off with. I'm a hip-hop artist.
Yep.
And all artists speak from whatever their life perspective is. So, you know, I think about, like, Mos Def, Talib, Kweli, Freeway, all these guys, Muslims, you know, devout Muslims, and then it comes out in their music, but nobody's sub-genre labeling
rappers.
That. Yeah, nobody says that. It's just Christian contemporary music has made an industry out of itself and, you know, marketed itself. And so people try to throw that in there. But... you know, for me, man, I think that's the thing, is a lot of times it can make people step away or be like, oh, I don't mess with that. Or if it's had a historically, if you had a bad experience with church or Christians or anything like that, most of the time people are like, oh, no thanks, I'll pass. Yeah, I don't want to listen to any of that. Or you think that it's artistically unexcellent, you know, and there's
some reputation for the past some reputation 50 years that you're going to have to grapple with.
Yeah. So, you know, there's all those things. And I'll give you a great example. Last night we were in Detroit, and there's this guy, his name's Fake Educator, and he's a sneaker educator. He helps people understand the difference between the fake Kanye West sneaker and the real one and all that stuff. Right, yeah.
That's
like, he's
crazy.
Always built a whole business on
sneaker
educating. Yeah.
I had no idea what you're talking
about. Oh, yeah, that's a big world, because, you know, these sneakers are going for thousands of dollars, and people are getting gypped and all kinds of stuff.
Fake. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. So he's built, and other things, Supreme, like hoodies, clothing, like all these high-end brands, he helps you differentiate. Anyways, we're in his store, and he's like, hey, man, you guys are dressed super fresh, and we just connected. We're like, yo, come out to the show tonight. So he comes out to the show and brings all his boys, right? And they, after the show, we end up hanging out, you know, having some beers, just like chilling. And he's like, I can't believe what I saw tonight. Mm. He was like, first of all, he's like, we've seen everybody come through here. Post Malone, 21 Savage, like everybody. He's like, you guys had hands down the best show we've ever seen in this venue, St. Andrews Hall, the historic, you know, where Eminem, just the Shelter, all that. Best show we've ever seen. He's like, there was these interesting moments where it felt like it was like Orthodox worship happening. I felt like I was in my grandmother's church. You know, because we really do this thing where we kind of mix, like, Orthodox tradition and, like, hymns and, like, stuff like that, because I think they're beautiful.
Yeah, that's
and then
awesome.
With, like, 140 BPM trap beat that just, like, you know, it makes you want to rage, and you're like, this is so weird. So we pull from those things, and he's like, man, it was just beautiful and weird, and he's like, I don't know what to think about it. And he's like, there's no way this is Christian something. You know what I mean? He's like, so they're just like, all my boxes are being blown up. And I was like, that's so funny, because it took you being there and experiencing the art for you to come to that conclusion. But I said, if someone would have let off with this title, would you have ever come? I never would have even came.
Quick shout out to the sponsors, the two sponsors. The first one is AstroPad. You know I love AstroPad. If you've listened to this show before, you know I'm a crazy AstroPad fan. If you've ever wanted to draw digitally, I don't think there's a better way than using the AstroPad app on the iPad Pro with your Apple Pencil. You can draw on your favorite programs like Photoshop and Illustrator and digitally paint and draw and doodle. I do all of my illustration work with this tool, and I'm a massive fan. So go check it out at astropad.com to learn more. Also, massive shout out to something that I have used for years and have been a free evangelist for them for quite some time. So it's cool to actually to have a real collaboration these days. I'm talking about Squarespace. They will help you make a beautiful website with no hassle. Do everything that you've ever wanted to do on a website with Squarespace and do it in style. I am genuinely a massive fan of Squarespace. I'm very thankful that they exist, and I'm thankful for them sponsoring this show. Go use the promo code PEPTALK, all one word, right now and get 10% off. Thanks, Squarespace.
Coming from a faith perspective, as an artist, does all kinds of things to the way that it's perceived. But then again, what about in terms of, like you saying, you have this, the history of hymns and orthodoxy. You know, I think because I was brought up in faith, in a church, there was a way of thinking about things on a possibly deeper perspective that has influenced the way that I engage creativity.
Sure.
And so I wonder if when you're, from your perspective of making stuff, do you feel like, and maybe it's too, maybe you're like, I don't know, maybe it's hard to get distance enough to see the difference between someone with faith and someone without faith, but I wonder, do you feel like that history and that faith is a blessing for you creatively? And I can also see as maybe a burden too of like, a lot of, I know a lot of like Christian musicians seem to be locked up in, they've been convinced that they've got to make this life count. And so there's all this writing on the music that they're making. And so then they're all tight with, this song has to do X, Y, Z. So they can't really, you know, they can't be free. So I don't know, do you feel like, I don't know, is there any other ways that it feels like a blessing or a curse?
I mean, obviously my faith is real to me. And it influences every aspect of my life. So, you know, it influences the way I treat my wife, the way we spend our money, the way we do generosity. All that stuff is informed, you know, the way we want to raise our kids. It's informed by that. So my music is naturally informed by that too. And I think it serves for a great source of inspiration. Mm-hmm. You know, like the way I'm understanding life and purpose and meaning and value, which are all things that humans in their essence are looking for and trying to understand. And so it serves greatly, you know, great for
just
that.
Just a wealth of inspiration.
Absolutely. Yeah. At the same time, there is sometimes expectations, sometimes very unfair expectations, and for you to create. You know, we joke about it sometimes because I think the expectation oftentimes is like a Christian bookstore Christianity, you know, which is like, if your idea of Christianity is that, like, half the stuff in the Bible couldn't go in that bookstore.
In the bookstore, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, we got, like, David, like, cutting dudes' heads off. You know
lots
what I'm saying?
Lots of sex.
You got lots of sex, drugs, and rock and roll going on. And they're like, oh, we can't sell that here, you know? So the thing is, I've never played by those rules. I've never cared to be like, what? You want me to... I almost like to prod at that, to be like, come on, guys, this is silly. My buddy Sho Baraka, right, he said the word penis in his song. Yeah. And they removed his whole album from all the bookstores. And he's like, really? Like, your kids have cell phones. So just like, remember that. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So it is kind of a weird thing. And there's like sometimes a pressure put on you from the outside or the industry, I would say, if you end up playing that game, for them to be like, oh, put some old lords in there or something, you know, try to conclude the song in like a, you know, in a nice little wrapped bow tie. But what we realize is life isn't tied up in nice little bow ties. No. It's messy. It's tough. It's complex. It's nuanced. And I think, you know, there's more artists starting to explore that. And I think it's making the music more real. And there's lots of reasons why that it's that way and it isn't. But, you know, for myself, for an example, like some of the barriers that I work inside of are a gift and a curse too. Like I say, you know what? I'm choosing consciously to not use profanity in my creativity.
Yeah.
Now that's a resource and a coloring tool.
Colorful language. It's like if you have the full, you know, grayscale spectrum of language from all the way from white to black and all of the hues. And if you're trying to express something, you want to have white next to black for the contrast of like, just like when the beat drops.
You want it
to be like nothing and then and so, and language is similar because someone's saying something really pretty and throws in, you know, an F-bomb or something, it shocks you. So there's a, you know,
It does something to us psychologically.
Colors, so
So I choose to not paint with some of those colors, right? And I'm like, the reason why I choose not to is because, one, I feel like there is a burden, a weight of people looking up to me, and a weight and a burden of me having to use my voice and influence for positivity and goodness, you know, and wholesomeness. And so it leaves me to sometimes be in the middle of writing a song like, man, this F word would fit so good right here because it's really the emotion I feel. And it pushes me to be more creative. Like, how could I express this in a different way?
Seems like stand-up comedians have, I've heard them have the same conversations of whether you're going to work clean or not.
Yeah.
So it affects, you know, where you're going to get booked and all that kind of stuff. And
absolutely.
I've heard Seinfeld talk about, you know, he worked clean most of the time and he always just saw it as like, I don't think this is true, but for him, he felt like it was the easy way out of a joke or, you know, if he was going to, whatever.
Yeah.
So it just call, it's a, you know, both can be valid, but
they
force you in a different kind of creativity.
Well, there's a benefit because then the joy that I get to experience is, you know, I show up at my concert, my meet and greet, and I got a guy walking up to me, and he's got his, like, 12-year-old son or 8-year-old son or something. He's like, man, we jam out to your music all the time.
Yeah.
We love that it's not cheesy, and we get to love it together, and I love hip-hop growing up. He's like, I feel like I can play this with my son and not feel like, you know, bust it open, motherfucker, you know? And, you know, there's some value to that where I see my music bringing families together, bringing father and son together, bringing a wide audience of people together. So, you know, that's inspiring to me to see that happen.
That's awesome. And I think, I do think like modern America and from faith, from all these perspectives, does need to at some point embrace that. Just because you're coming through the lens of faith and positivity doesn't mean that every movie is G.
Like, sure.
Just like you said, you know, every book of the Bible is not rated G. So we need the full spectrum. But I think, and also to all that point, I feel like there's a lot of really interesting stuff. All these boundaries broken between you and Lecrae, and then even to Kendrick and Chance.
Yep.
Doing all these things that are definitely breaking down walls in the way that everybody perceives.
Absolutely.
What's it mean to have faith and be a creative person?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And actually, I wanted to ask you about your latest project. Is really awesome. The Magic and Bird. I feel like you have brought such a humor to this landscape of the faith influenced creativity and the hip hop world.
Yeah.
I felt like when I was watching you do all the promo stuff on Instagram that this was just like the most unique thing in the world and must just like put you into a totally new category because I don't see a lot of that tongue in cheek, having fun.
Yeah.
Did that feel like a risk to you?
It didn't feel like a risk to me because I think my fans know that I have a sense of humor. You know what I'm saying? And like, I've always pressed into that. Right. I've always pressed into the humor. And I think the two words that people have always used to describe my music is fun and personal.
Right.
I get really vulnerable, really real, and then I also have a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And I just, like, don't take myself too seriously at times, and always, you know, I'll roast myself for the sake of, you know, a good joke. Yeah. So, you know, I didn't think it was a long shot for us. For me and my buddy Words Played, who's the collaborator on the project, me and him, I mean, just get us in a room together and put a camera on it. Forget about it. You got 10 yeah. skits. And it's just, we've been doing that for 10 years as friends. So it was just natural for us. We think in skits.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like something
yeah.
happens and then it's
my
like...
My cousins and I are the same.
Yeah, you just talk, go into like a talking head and you're just like, that's the way we think. So it was just fun and we thought it was really interesting.
Uh-huh.
You know, not... You know, which is probably the most important thing right now is like to break through is having something that's interesting.
There's so much noise, so much of the same.
Yeah.
Thing. Yeah.
So that's why we're in absurd outfits. You know what
yeah.
I'm saying? Like looking like terrible
like the,
2000 draft day.
So yeah.
Big shout out to LeBron James' awful all white. Suit that he wore to draft
yeah.
day that inspired us with the baggy pants.
Yeah.
You know, and then we made trading cards. I got to get you the trading
awesome.
Cards.
Awesome. Yeah, that's awesome.
We have these NBA trading cards with us, last round pick. I mean, they're just
yeah,
hilarious.
Yeah,
you're going to love
so
them.
So good. I feel like there's tons of, there's so much to learn. It seems like it was really natural to you, but I feel like one of the things with all the creative people I work with, I'm always trying to get them to think about striking the perfect balance between fitting in and standing out. So like, you, and I feel like everybody naturally falls into one category.
Yeah.
Either they're too far outside the box where like no one has any context for what you're
yeah.
doing, or they're too playing the game of like, I want to be this rapper and this is what it means to be a cool rapper in 2017, so
yeah.
I have to do X, Y, and Z just like this guy's doing.
Yeah.
And so much so that you're just white noise. Like
just become
like,
another.
Okay. But if, and so I just felt like that was such an awesome move to be like, I don't know, nobody's doing this and really having a good time.
Yeah.
And playing this other, this really authentic other side of you.
Yeah.
But
yeah, it was like a half comedy project, half
yeah.
hip-hop record. You know, the music's not like a joke. The music
no.
is great, but all the promo pieces and the skits were funny and very like Office-esque.
Yes.
You know,
yeah.
Office meets ESPN.
Yeah.
You know, it just was super fun, and we keep doing them. You know, we're
yeah.
out on this tour, and we keep putting skits together. And so on our Minor League YouTube page, you can see all the little episodes. We got some with, you know, even Allen Houston from the Knicks.
Yeah.
You know, just mixing it in and just having
a
blast.
Link in the show notes.
Yeah, put a link.
Yeah.
They'll see the episodes.
That's
they'll
awesome, trip. But it's also really cool because it sounds like it was a tool to break out of that anxiety and obsession.
Yeah. That's what Magic and Bird really was for
yeah.
me. You know, because I was working on this album, this new one I'm working on, for over a year.
Mm.
And I got to a spot where, you know, I went to the Pacific Northwest and I worked in an Airbnb just out of this beautiful house for a week. And I came back with all these
it's
incredible
like
songs.
Cabin.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
We went to Bainbridge Island in Pacific Northwest and got some great coffee and some time to create. And I intentionally grabbed two different producers from different worlds, one from like a crazy indie rock and one from like a hip hop world, and mashed them together. And we made some beautiful stuff. And I came back to the label and I played it for them and they go, I was like, let's just put it out as an EP. And they were like, this is incredible. You have to make this an album. So now I'm like, all right, let's make it an album. So then for the next year, I tried making it an album and forcing it to be this thing that it really wasn't. And it's been so hard to complete it because it went from this fun, organic five-song thing to that. And so in all of my angst, I have one person that I lean on really heavy, a couple people. Alex Medina is one.
Yeah.
And the other one is Delgis. He's the creative director for Minor League, which is
okay.
our creative venture.
Yeah.
And he's there to be my sounding board and help me think through stuff and process and create. And he said, man, it seems like you're really like losing touch of yourself as you're overthinking and overcooking these records.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was working on a song and I'm still working on it. It's been almost a year
yeah.
on a song because I feel like it's so good. It's like,
yeah.
oh, it's gonna.
Yeah.
And there was a podcast that really helped me out with that. The Malcolm Gladwell one about the two creatives, the Picasso versus Cezanne.
Ah.
Picasso was able to create incredible bodies of work in a short period of time and then just move on. Masterpiece, masterpiece, masterpiece. And Cezanne spent 15 years working on Hallelujah, working on a painting. Right. And he tied it into that song Hallelujah, which took like 15 years to finally be made and come to life and all that. And there's two different kinds of creatives, he was saying. You
is
know?
This revisionist history?
Revisionist podcast, yeah, man. Sorry to plug other podcasts, you know. But, you know, I feel like maybe I'm a Cezanne. Maybe I just overcook and overthink and overdo. Right. And meanwhile, Picasso's like, show up, paint, done, amazing, you know? And so as I was going through that process, overcooking, overthinking, he was like, man, why don't you just try having fun? Why don't you put together a little EP, you know, use some of these fun records that weren't going to be out on the other one and use it as a springboard. And then we got together for 3 weeks. And man, it was one of the best things that could have ever happened to my creativity. And I would say this is a remedy. Mm. Break out of what you're doing and go do something else.
Yes.
Because when you think naturally in your mind that, okay, I want it to be good, I'm just gonna keep working at it, and keep working at it, and keep working at it, and keep tweaking it and refining, and then it's gonna be better.
Yeah.
And sometimes the best thing to do is just to go out and pick up a totally different thing and start doing it.
Yep.
You know, so I started picking up film photography. You know, I started picking up little graphic design things. Like, I'm just like, let me be creative in other spaces and play again. And the reason why I love my film photography stuff, you'll see my film camera in there, is because there's no pressure. I take a picture and I enjoy the process and I don't get paid for it.
Mm-hmm.
And no one expects me to create a painting or a picture that is going to be, you know, have to be sold. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, this is freeing. So this Magic and Bird project was really low pressure. It was me hanging out with my friend, kicking around ideas in the studio, trying stuff, and just having straight fun. And, you know, we dropped it in the summer, and it's like, here, enjoy this while I go back to work on my album.
Yeah.
And it was a holdover project, and it ended up becoming this beautiful thing that we just, like, enjoyed. And so,
do you feel like it's unlocked you a little bit?
I do feel like it's unlocked me. I feel like I brought a new creative energy into the back half of this album now.
Man, that's awesome.
And it's, like, super freeing. I'm like, oh, man. Or collaborating. Just collaborating. Yeah. Just working with someone else, their whole perspective and their approach in making music makes you question yours and go, oh.
Shakes it up.
That's kind of cool. Maybe I'm going to try this. And so you can tell that this is a totally different project than anything else I've put out. It's a lot more fun and simple. And
not overthinking it. And so other than those things, is there anything else that you're, any other like change of approach for the new album that is different to the previous ones? Like, I always find that, like, whenever, do you know the magazine, The Great Discontent?
No.
Okay, so it's like a creative magazine. It's just interviews. It started online. But The Great Discontent, the name, is defining the discontent of creative people.
Ugh.
Of, like, the never-ending.
It's so good. That's such a good name.
It's so good. So that's the definition of, it's called The Great Discontent, that discontent that we have as creative people. And I find that when a creative person leaves a project, they have all these qualms and all that. This is what I did wrong. These are the things that, this is why I didn't get my best work out on that. If I do a talk or something, I'll leave and be like, and my wife will call me and be like, how'd it go? And like, it was fine, but here's what I did wrong. And you take those and they influence your new strategies for the next thing. Is there any, do you have new strategies about how to mine those gems this next time?
Well, you know what? I really feel like I have a new approach in how I'm going to make the music. And for a long time, I had this self-doubt about me being a producer. Mm. See, I started out as a producer.
This is really interesting,
Started out as a producer. And then I was just like, from other people, Lecrae and so on and so forth, he's like, yeah, man, I started out producing myself too. And then I realized other people are better at it than me. So I just leave it to them now. And so, you know, I kind of got away from the producing thing and I kept on having, I've been saying for this for the last 5 years, I'm looking for my 40, you know, so Drake, big producer, he's got 40 as his like right-hand man who helps him create everything. I'm like, who's going to be my 40? And I can't seem to find the right combination with anybody. And I've tried so many people.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, man, and I'm realizing maybe I'm my 40.
Yeah.
You know, and I started producing myself again. I started putting down my own ideas. And I'm realizing that I'm actually getting far more done by me not waiting on anybody and taking my ideas as far as I can take them with the resources that I have,
yeah.
and then letting other people contribute later. So that song, I Ain't Done, like I was telling you about earlier, I'm producing this for me, and I don't care if I don't got the best sounds. I don't care about any of that stuff. The story is I made it, and it's very punk rock, right? Punk rock is like, we don't really know how to play guitar, but I'm just gonna play it.
I'm playing it.
And I'm gonna like put my message out. And man, that approach has really helped me bring the songs to life quicker, have more accuracy in what I want them to be. It's now not a crazy vision I'm trying to instill in another person and have them bring it to life.
Yeah.
It's me bringing it 80% to life and then them, you know, zombie Voltroning it together, you know, Frankensteining it.
Man, it sounds like in the you hit this inflection point that happens in the hero's journey. You familiar with like the hero's journey idea of like the hero's journey is just this concept that comes out of Joseph Campbell, comparative mythology, found that this kind of same pattern happens in all world mythology and religions. And it's basically like Harry Potter, Neo, the Lego movie, Moana. It's the chosen one, right? You're the chosen one, and then this is the pattern that happens in that story. And one of the things that happens at the end is going against your mentor to kind of find your own path. Dude, it's so good. It's Yoda. It's when Yoda's like, Luke, you have to stay to finish your training. And Luke's like, I have to go save Han and Leia. And it's like, by going against that teaching, that's when you become the master. Because you have to go your own destiny. It sounds like to me, you're like, there's so much to gain from studying what other people do and really having, really understanding like what Drake did. Like, you know, this thing he had with 40, it's right?
Yeah.
Noah, and this special relationship they have. And you learn so much from it, but at some point, you have to go drop the ring in without Gandalf. He's not coming with you. You have to go and do it. It sounds like...
You got me hyped.
Dude, I love it, man. I'm hyped. That's what I'm all about. But you found your own path.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when it's like the transcendent stuff starts to happen. Because it happened to me, too. Just like... I know none of my heroes would call themselves pizza. I know that, like, but that's me. That's what I had to do. That's a really stupid example of it.
Love that. No, but you were like, I'm a go. Like, this
I'm
is
pizza,
me,
man. Man, that's awesome.
There's one thing that I wanted to throw in there too, about when we were talking about at the beginning about you can't stop me, right?
Yeah.
One of the things that was really helpful for me creatively to realize where one of my growth edges were.
Mm-hmm.
Was this book by Donald Miller called Scary Close, and it's about vulnerability. And, man, what he said in that book was, like, life-changing.
Mm.
I had said, you know, I dropped Heroes for Sale, and it was a success, did really great. I dropped Neverland, did really great, huge success. And now all of a sudden I'm feeling this, like, I got to do it again, right?
Yeah.
So I'm reading in his book, and it's almost in a parallel of my life.
Mm.
This guy, Donald Miller, drops a book. He says, this is what the process, he said, man, I went up to the mountains, smoked a pipe, hung out, took in the nature, penned my book in like, you know, 6 months, 4 months or something like that. Just had a time of my life, put it out. You know, it does really well. He said, then the book company was like, hey, do another one. He goes out, smokes his pipe, takes in the nature, and then he writes another book, now known as Blue Like Jazz, which ended up being a huge New York Times bestseller. Yeah. And then he was like, now the company's like, hey, do it a third time. And so now he's like, I'm starting to psych myself out, freaking myself out. How can I live up to the first two books? And so I said, now this book took about 2 years to write, like double the length of all the other ones. And he's like, it comes out, doesn't do so good. Then the next book comes, and he's like, and that one took 4 years to put out. And then the next one is like, kept on coming out, and it was just like all these books that couldn't really live up to the first few, and they were taking longer and longer and longer because he was getting that comparison game and that you know what I'm saying, that fear. And I was like, dude, that's me. It's taking me so much longer to put out music now. When before, I dropped Heroes for Sale. 8 months later, I dropped Neverland. I was like, what? I'm in the zone. I'm just putting it out. I'm not comparing. I'm not worried about anything. And he said he went to go visit his friend, And he was like, hey, man, I've been reading your stuff lately. And he said, I noticed there's a difference in it from your earlier stuff. And he was like, really? You notice? And he was like, yeah. He's like, the difference is you're careful. And that joint blew me away. He was like, all of a sudden you started to be careful. And the thing that made you so great was that you weren't careful at the beginning. You were just writing what you thought and what you felt. And then you were the flow, man. Why you start caring? And he was like, honestly, after I started listening to all the critiques, the praises and the criticisms, he was like, I was trying to account for all of that and let it inform not my new writings. And he's like, I would put so many caveats in a sentence that by the time you got to the end of it, you couldn't even understand what I was trying to say. Mm-hmm. It's just like, this is what I think. And then it's like, oh, but considering what they're going to say, I'll add this thing and then switch these words and do X, Y. By the end, it was this distorted thing anyways, trying to please everybody. And that was so freeing for me to see another creative wrestle with that and for carefulness to be a huge hindrance in creativity. You know, like feeling the freedom to fail, that like innovation can come at the cost of failure, that, you know, my best work is going to happen with as little thought as much as being led by my feelings and emotions at the time, you know. There's that.
And that's,
you
know, so good. And I think it's that same thing. It's that same thing of, you know, editing while you're writing. Like, you know, instead of just writing. And that editing voice of your brain can't exist at the same time as your creative voice of just flow and play. And
that's
super good. And I actually think I have another theory on this. I don't know if I've lived this one. I just have a theory that... that it's an incomplete part of the cycle where you have the youth of the wisdom of youth, where you're just like doing it, playing, and you're having fun, and you get like the beginner's luck, or you're just like tapping into the raw thing that you've got going on, and those are your early things that you make. And then you go into like the overthinking, you're really trying to refine what you do, level up what you do, and it's messy and it's not really that nice. It's like the montage in the movie where we just want to speed it up.
This is
not pretty, nobody wants to see this part. And but I actually think, for me, I'm thinking that the stuff that, if you can get through, I think a lot of people get stuck there. Just keep refining, keep overthinking, keep overworking. And I think, and then they're always trying to go back. And I think that you can learn something by looking back, but I actually think that your best work is another phase where you're a master, because what you learn with the overcooking and the refining stuff is actually good stuff. But if you can plug it into the play and the not careful stuff, then you start being like a virtuoso where you can do great creativity on command. Like the first stuff might have been like on accident, like a little bit, not for you in particular, but just everybody, you know, you're just playing stuff. Some of it's good. Wow, that track's amazing. Some of it's, well, it was not. It's just like, I don't know, but you start, I think you see people, if they get through that valley of the refining and the overcooking and they get to the other side, that's the best stuff.
I hope you're right, because if not, that means that we're washed up. The only other alternative is like, now you suck.
The good stuff's around the corner.
Yeah, man, it's coming. Well, you know what? What made me really feel that actually was when I did, I watched The Defiant Ones with Jimmy Iovine and Dr. Dre.
Right.
They did a series on HBO, 4 or 5 part series. And it just tells the story of them too, you know, building Interscope and all the ups and downs of Dr. Dre's career. And I didn't realize, you know, Dr. Dre, you think The Chronic, like the greatest legend, like hip hop records of all time. And you're like, oh, I didn't realize this guy kind of started over his career like 4 or 5 times and had like these valleys of like, you're done. And then it was like, boom, like blew up again, then dropped some albums that just sucked, like on Aftermath, and produced all these things terrible, and then blew up again. And you're like, all right. It gave me hope knowing that I hit like a big peak and I felt like I had declined a little bit and then maybe another big peak's coming. You don't know, but he just kept working through it and refining. And he's a freak perfectionist.
Yeah.
He is. It's like scary.
It's like, yeah.
Like people have been waiting on an album called Detox.
I know.
For,
yeah. Forever.
You know, 10,
they dropped
15
like
years.
A track or two or something, but
never came out. It won't come out. It's done. Yeah. They scrapped it.
They did? Oh my gosh. Do you know Brad Montague?
No.
He's the guy behind Kid President. You know, Kid President.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He did a, he's got a really good talk. You should go check it out sometime where he talks about, he did a pep talk. He's a friend of mine, this guy. And he talks about how he did the pep talk through Kid President. And he's talking about, you know, what if Michael Jordan never gave up? We'd never have Space Jam. And he's like, what will be your Space Jam? And that video ended up getting like 40 million views.
Oh, wow.
And he was like, this is amazing. But then after it all settled down, he was like, wait, what if that's my Space Jam? And it's it.
Ooh.
That's it. Like, I'm done. Like, what am I going to do the rest of my life?
Yeah.
And he's got a really good talk that is really encouraging when you feel like, what if my best work is behind me? So
Oof.
You should check that out.
Please.
Well, I think I'm not going to take any more of your time. Is there anything else that you want to plug or give a shout out to or anything?
Yeah, I mean, the Magic and Bird album is out. And,
yeah, you should definitely go check that out. It's got some good skits.
Listen to it. Funny skits, man. And then it's got also great video skits, you know. So it's on our YouTube page. We're trying to build that.
Yep.
And then, you know, just my socials, Andy Mineo. You know, you can keep up with me.
Awesome.
I try to keep my Instagram as lively as possible.
It's good. It's a good follow. Yeah.
It's good
it's
fun.
It's a good addition to,
yeah,
your,
man.
To your feed. That's awesome, man. I am so thrilled to have this conversation with you. And it was fantastic.
And like I said, this is hands down one of my favorite podcasts on the planet. I frequent this and it helps me, you know, not feel crazy,
yeah.
Not feel alone.
A lot of it's just solidarity.
Yeah, man, and it just helps me to keep going, you know, and so I'm grateful for what you do, man. Thanks for having me. That's, like, really an honor.
Man, that's amazing. Thank you.
For sure. Because people make fun, not just laugh, but that was me as a child. I just pray you forgive me.
Guys, come on. That was so good. Thank you, Andy. Thank you so much for being on the show. You are awesome. Your music is awesome. And I am so thrilled to be able to go along for the ride and watch where you take things next. By the way, friends, for all of you guys who know I'm like a crazy Boyz II Men fan, you know, I grew up listening to hip-hop and rap and R&B. I don't listen to as much of it now as I used to. I follow Kendrick and Chance, and I like some Drake and Kanye, but it's not the world that I'm really in these days in my most of the music I listen to. But I was pleasantly surprised by one of Andy's latest songs. I think it's called Candy Rain, and it's a reference to a 90s R&B song that I was obsessed with when I was a kid called Candy Rain by Soul For Real. And I know every word by heart even to this day. And even to this day, I sometimes throw that bad baby on and it gets me in that nostalgic place. And Andy has a song that is about Candy Rain. You should go check it out on Spotify. It's fantastic. It's got those good 90s R&B vibes and more. So Andy, thank you so much for being on the show. You are awesome. And I know everybody's going to get a kick out of this episode. Thanks to Yoni Wolf and the band Y. Thanks to for our theme music. Thanks to Nate Utesh and the band Metavari for the other tunes. Metavari, Metavari. New album dropped called Symmetry. It's fantastic to get into the zone and do your work too. So go check that out on Spotify. Thanks to Alex Sugg for editing this podcast, and he's going to start throwing in some of his tunes into this show, I think, as well. He's got some really good tunes that are going to sync up with his podcast very nicely. He might have even done it this episode. Only time will tell.
Anyway, thanks, Alex. Thanks to all of you guys for listening to this show every week. You are the lifeblood of this show. And, you know, every week I try to just, like, bleed all over this tape and spill my guts about how thankful I am to all of you guys. And until I hope this thing freaking fuels you up to the highest levels of pep all week. And when you start to run out, I'll be back again next week to bring you supercharged levels of creative pep. But until then, stay pepped up. Really feel like